Sirianni staying. Callahan conjuring quarterback creativity. Yes, quarterback starts with the C. I can do that because it's time for Inside Coverage. Welcome to Inside Coverage, part of the Zero Blitz family, presented by Prime. She's Jory Epstein. I'm Jason Fitz. Jory, as a seasoned reader, writer, as somebody that's absolutely intelligent, how much does it bother you that I decided to make quarterback start with the C just so I could get alliteration? Look, I'm a fan of alliteration. Anytime Callahan conjuring quarterback creativity doesn't really count as alliteration. So I spelled it in our Google Doc with a C just to see if that made your skin crawl. Was I successful in making you at least a little uncomfortable with my terrible grammar?
See, here's the thing. According to dictionary.com, it's actually, depending whether who you ask, there's two definitions. One of them is about two or more words with the same letter. The others is two or more stressed syllables of a word group with the same consonant sound or sound group. I could go on. I won't. But the point is, the number one definition on dictionary.com supports what you just did, and so do I.
Wow. So Callahan conjuring quarterback creativity counts as alliteration. I am feeling it.
As long as you don't ask me to say it five times fast, we are good.
Okay, well, look, I can barely read these things myself, so I think we've now managed to accomplish greatness. We've got a lot to break down, and there's a lot of big news. Before we get into the specific news, though, I'm a little stunned, Jory. As we sit here right now, I'm a little shooketh all the way to my core. Because if you'd have asked me on Black Monday to figure out what things we thought were kind of a given, I would have thought by now that we had at least an idea of where Belichick was going to go. It still feels like we're in limbo. Does it feel strange? Like, I just feel uncomfortable with the unease here of not knowing what's going to happen with two of the biggest names in this entire process.
I've thought for a while now that Bill Belichick, Mike Vrabel, Pete Carroll, Jim Harbaugh, then you also have the up-and-coming names, Ben Johnson, Bobby Slowick, that someone was going to be left out to dry. And I think that it doesn't necessarily reflect on what their resume is, or even necessarily if they could ever be good again, but just not everyone's going to get an opportunity. And then I think you add in the dynamics of who wants a young coach versus an old coach? What owners are going to have the pick of the litter versus not? Like, could Bill Belichick get the job with Carolina, and does he not want it? I think we have to ask ourselves that question. And so I think for me, it's interesting. Like, I'm not positive that Bill Belichick will be a head coach in 2024. I think it's likely, but I'm not positive. I think that there's a reason we've really only heard from Atlanta hiring him. And I think that there's also a lot of speculation around the league that Atlanta is very interested in other people, including Raheem Morris. And I think, remember, 72 years old. He has not had success in the post-Tom Brady era. He is going to want general manager control. And as one of the players in the Patriots locker room told me when I was there a couple weeks ago when I was there, you can't pull that from a guy. It's his pride at stake, and he's got six Super Bowls. So you have to keep his pride in mind. So I think there's just so many dynamics in both directions. And it honestly might be most interesting to me how much Belichick is willing to compromise relative to what he wants in order to get a head coaching job. Like, does he start off going into these interviews, I need roster control, I need this with coaching, I'm bringing in Joe Judge and Matt Patricia and all these guys? And then if he doesn't get that Atlanta job, does he start to drop in his criteria? What do you think will be his approach?
Yeah, but here's the thing. I don't think if you're Bill, you can step back from what you think made you you. But what's hard about this is, you know, I made the analogy before that it's almost like a student film director at USC making Leonardo DiCaprio audition for a role. Like, it feels almost insulting to go through one interview. It feels even more insulting to have to go through two, and then to go through two interviews but not really have it cemented. There is a moment where if you are Bill, you're going to continue to look at your resume and say, okay, this is the way I do things. Because what you don't want, and this is where there's like this lady justice, the sort of scales of justice, I should say. If you're Bill, how much do you want to coach if you can't coach the way you want, how you want, but also how much are you willing to sacrifice your legacy if you get to do what you want the way you want, and it doesn't work. So like Bill needs to be really certain that wherever he goes, he gets the support he wants, because it will tarnish his legacy if he goes to Atlanta and only wins 5 or 6 games, right? Like, people are inevitably going to say something about that if it happens. But conversely, man, you might have to look in the mirror and ask yourself if you could do business a different way. And I don't know if you can do that if you're Bill. Like, that would take sacrificing a ton of pride, right? Like, we all sort of, and I don't mean pride in a bad way, Jory. Like, I think sometimes we use ego and pride as negative words. I think when you've been great at something, you're allowed to have pride in your work. You're allowed to have ego in what you do. You're allowed to feel great about how you do what you do. Right now, though, it's got to be tough to look at the market and realize that maybe the market doesn't want what you do, how you do. Are you really going to veer off of that? I wouldn't if I was Belichick.
Yeah, our colleague Charles Robinson has talked a lot about this idea of how much are we going to continue to see the coaches with the roster control power. That's sort of, we're coming to an end of the era in that regard. Most team owners do not want their coaches having full control. But again, in terms of his tarnished legacy, I still think he's a defensive mastermind. And I still think the combination of him and Brady was incredible and was not only about Brady. But 7-9, 10-7, 8-9, 4-13. Like, his legacy is different than it was 4 years ago already. Do I think he's still probably the greatest coach in NFL history? Yes. But do I think he has proven that he's still at that peak? He hasn't proven it in the post-Tom Brady era. Again, one winning season in those 4-13. Do you think the greatest coach at the peak is going to have a 4-13 team? And if so, again, the question is personnel versus coaching. Is he coaching up a team that should have been 1-16 to 4-13? Well, he brought the personnel and he picked him.
That's such a fair point, because if we're being real, when Tom Brady goes into the Hall of Fame, there will be no conversation about who was responsible for his greatness. Because of what he accomplished in Tampa Bay, that's gone. If today Bill Belichick announced to the world he's retiring, in 5 years, there will be debate shows that will look at each other and say, was it Brady or Belichick? Because we didn't see him do it, that's going to be an inevitability. 5 years is not that long. So the media landscape and the way we cover football isn't going to change that much in 5 years. If Bill decides that he needs to walk away, or if the market doesn't want him, I think there is going to be real questions in 5 years that are raised, right or wrong, in the way that they cover Belichick's greatness, because we saw Brady do it without Bill. It doesn't mean that Bill's not the greatest of all time. It just means that if he wants those question marks answered, if he wants them eliminated, he's going to have to go somewhere else, and he's going to have to win at a very high level. That's the only thing that stops that conversation.
Yeah. And again, I think this is a different conversation if he wasn't within a couple years of the winningest coach record. That is why I think he wants to coach, and why he might, if you say, hey, you're going to have to give up a little bit of your personnel control, but you might be able to go down in NFL record books as the winningest coach in NFL history. That is more appealing to me if I'm him than if that was not in contention. And so you have to keep that in mind in terms of what he's going for.
Can we agree to, Jory, you are constantly around NFL owners. Being around players meetings and the owners meetings, all of these things. The owners, to your point, are a very, I want to say this carefully, interesting group of people, right? Like, if you imagine the best and worst of your grandpa and grandma and all of it, like, there's a little bit of all of it in NFL owners. So what you have are, I think, let's say, eccentric billionaires out here that you're trying to build a relationship with. That is not the easiest thing in the world. I have, in my limited interaction around NFL owners, more often than not, I've walked away saying, like, I have no idea how you even hang out in that group. Like, I don't understand it. So it is interesting, your point, that owners across the board in the NFL are a peculiar group. So that's got to be part of this when you're Harbaugh and you're looking around saying, man, you know what you have to deal with at Michigan? You have to deal with the athletic director and the booster and all those things. You don't have to deal.
The boosters can get crazy. Oh,
yeah. Buddy Garrity, straight realistic. Out of Friday Night Lights. Okay, you don't get the Friday Night Lights reference. Have you? You've never seen Friday Night Lights, but let me tell you, Buddy Garrity. All right, Buddy Garrity on Friday Night Lights, and the TV is, especially, by the way, hot take, the TV show better than the movie. Buddy Garrity was like the meddling used car dealer owner, right? Like, he was in every meeting trying to get coach to play the right high school football kids. Like, Buddy Garrity times 1,000 when you're talking about Michigan football. That isn't fair. That is fair. You got to deal with a bunch of Buddy Garrity's. Go watch the show, Joey. You never will. But, you know, that's the hope there. But I will say, I don't know if I, like, at least I can keep those guys. If I win football games, they all sit down, shut up, and color in their books. I don't know what you do to stop the Spanos family or Mark Davis or all of these people from, you know, meddling throughout the process of everything. It just seems like that's a difficult life.
I think that's actually a really good transition to the Carolina Panthers and how you end up with Dan Morgan as general manager, because to me, that's the thing. It's like, who does David Tepper trust? Who does David Tepper already have on his side? And I think it's so fascinating because, again, like if you're in the building, you watch Dan Morgan play and you know he's been there, then you might think like, well, this guy knows what he's doing. He's an up and coming star. And I always struggle of how much to hold someone in the building responsible for the team's success when they were there, but they weren't in charge, because I think it can be very hard to differentiate, especially most of us are not in there from day to day. But still, it's like when we did the story last week about what a new coach would look for, one of the things is coming in with the new GM. So it's a clean slate. Like if you know that the owner is already on the GM side, and I think Philadelphia is another good example of that, then how much do you really have a clean slate? How much do you really get to start fresh and really get to prove yourself versus the GM could say whatever they want to the owner and they've already been in cahoots. And we saw this in Carolina this year when Frank Reich didn't make it through the year. It's like, well, there's the offensive line coach and the special teams coach who were reportedly leaking things to the ownership and to the front office. It's like, are we not setting ourselves up for this again in Carolina?
I think it's interesting, though, because right now, maybe we're in this world where everybody sees, I know it's a coach, not a GM, but you see what DeMeco's done with the Texans. And part of that conversation is about the fact that DeMeco understood the organization from the minute he stepped in the door. There was a moment for me with Dan Morgan, like he knows exactly what he's getting into. And one thing that I've found jarring when you talk to former coaches is listening to former coaches talk about trying to change culture and how difficult it is. And I think sometimes that has to come down to the fact that you walk in the door, you don't really know how they've done business or how they do business. You think you know, but you have a couple of dinners and then all of a sudden you get this job, right? If you're Dan Morgan, you're walking in and you know exactly what you're up against. You know the community, you know the inside of the locker room, you know the ownership structure, you know the building, you know the organization, you know the brand, you know the history, you know the local radio guys that cover it. Like, there isn't a variable you're going to get that you don't already understand when you get that job. I'm not saying it makes you successful, but it does take away one variable of trying to learn the culture that you're attempting to change. And I don't know that that doesn't turn out when you're Carolina and everything's just busted. Maybe there's some sort of element here of, hey, let's at least get somebody that knows and can help in deciding what the coaching situation looks like, can help be a voice of who we've been and who we want to be because he's been there.
So are you now giving me Greg Olsen as the head coach of the Carolina Panthers?
Oh, my God. Look, if Olsen's going to get pushed out as the number one broadcaster, come on, let's go.
I know. I actually think he'd be good, but that would be such a loss for all of us who listen to the broadcast because he's the best.
Do we really think Brady's going to take that job? Like, I mean, I know Brady has the contract and all these things. And like, I love the concept of Brady just walking into the number one team and being Brady. But like, I don't know. Olsen's done so well and Brady seems to be happy right now. Like Olsen, if I'm Olsen, like I'm going to be number one somewhere. Like he might be the best of all of them on any of the broadcasts at this point and does it in such a real way where you never feel like you're being talked down to. Things are explained to in a way that makes so much sense. He's not afraid. Like the analytics conversation that went all over social media the other day, like he's not afraid to get into those in the process, but also he has the natural gift of explaining what you just saw from a player's perspective in a way that you can actually absorb. I think he makes me smarter when I watch him call games.
I always feel that way. He's my favorite color guy.
We got to work on getting him on the show. Like we just, you know, maybe Super Bowl week, we'll get him on Inside Coverage and we'll ask him like, maybe he and Tom Brady have a little boxing match. Maybe we'll let him fight it out for charity and see who keeps the number one job. I'm just throwing out suggestions. All right. So
many options. So on that note though, cause you mentioned what the value can be when you don't have to learn personalities or you don't have to learn culture. So I want to tell you something. Dan Morgan, before he came back to the Carolina Panthers in the front office, 2011 to 2017, was working for the Seattle Seahawks. There was another guy who was hired in 2010 and was the coach past 2017 as the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks. And also, as we learned very clearly from the way he talked to John Schneider during his exit press conference, seemed to really have a hand and get final say on who was on his staff. And so do you think there's a chance we could see Pete Carroll in Carolina? Because I don't, my understanding of how Pete Carroll had power in Seattle was such that Dan Morgan would not have been hired, much less have stuck around for 7 years, if Pete Carroll had not signed off on it and liked it. And so if you're saying like, hey, this is a guy in Pete who still wants this opportunity, this is someone who, if you want to have this chance to succeed in Carolina, the better you have that relationship with the front office, well, that's really important to be lockstep. Also, if you're Dan Morgan and you haven't been in that general manager role before, maybe you're more open to Pete Carroll having a heavy say than someone like John Schneider, who after 14 years is like, nah, I got it, dude. Like, let me be. I don't know. I think it's very interesting. Also, again, good defense, young quarterback. Pete Carroll saw that in Russell Wilson and the Legion of Boom. I mean, do you think, one, the Panthers would be interested, and two, that Pete would be a good fit for that job?
Yes, and they should be. And if they are, it's a great fit for him for the very reasons you just said. It also helps Dan Morgan. Like, the fact that they have a pre-existing relationship really makes it easier for Pete to come in and be like, hey, man, think about this. Hey, man, think about that. Like, there is such a respect way to get advice, right? No matter what you're doing for a living. Like, I think whether when I was in the music business or when I transitioned into sports, like there's such an easy way. Kevin Negandhi, close friend. And when I was first starting at ESPN, Kevin sat me down and was like, hey, here's a couple of things to think about and do this. And it was done in such a build up way of respect that I've always loved him as a friend. But my respect grew in that moment because he really cared about and helped my development. If you're Dan Morgan and you can bring in somebody that you know you have that relationship with, don't you do that? I mean, that makes sense. And if you are the Panthers organization, you want to legitimize your process, don't you bring in Pete Carroll? Because immediately that shuts everybody up on any concept of what you're trying to do. And knowing, as I continually say over the last 3 weeks, that hiring a head coach is an absolute crapshoot, why not eliminate some of the variables you're not sure of? You know Pete Carroll can coach at the end of the day. You know Pete Carroll still has the energy to bring it at the end of the day. You know that Pete Carroll knows what he's doing. So you've eliminated some of these variables. Doesn't mean it's going to go perfect for you. But if I can eliminate the variables, bring in a brand that absolutely helps me day one be more legitimate in the eyes of everyone, I can raise the attention on my franchise, and I can bring in somebody my new GM trusts to help me develop into the role. That's a win for everybody. Like, I'd back up the Brinks truck all day, every day, if I'm the Carolina Panthers and have the chance to get Pete Carroll.
Yeah, and I think, look, I don't think Pete Carroll is going to have his pick of the litter here when you look at who's out there on the market. So if he wants to be coaching this year, which he made very clear in his press conference that he did, I think this is a good move for him. I also don't think the Panthers are going to have the pick of the litter, because I think that David Tepper scares people. And I don't mean scares people like intimidates them, but scares people like, I don't want to get anything near that because I might only have one chance at head coach. Well, Pete Carroll will be on his second chance at head coach. Even a Dan Quinn, like he has decided in past years to withdraw himself from the Carolina Panthers interview. So I don't think you're getting someone like him. And again, I'm not saying he's better or worse than Pete Carroll. So I don't know. I think that there's a lot of opportunity. I also have felt from the start that someone who has the clout and the self-confidence in what they've accomplished in this league, who can stand up to David Tepper, is actually what David Tepper needs. So obviously Bill Belichick would stand up to David Tepper, but I don't think he would go there. And I also don't think it's going to get him closer to that win rate very quickly. And so I think that, I don't know. I really think that Pete, with his defensive mind, what he could do with a talented defense in Carolina, and then the way he could stand up to Tepper, the way he could work with Dan Morgan, the way he'll understand who to empower to get Bryce Young where he needs to go. I just think that that's who I would say is the best compatibility fit there.
Yeah, that I totally agree.
So I think we just figured it out for them.
Yeah, so we have hired Pete Carroll to the Seahawks. We're hiring Belichick to the Falcons, and we're hiring Harbaugh to the Chargers. I mean, are we? Well,
are
you
we
tell
hiring
me.
Belichick?
I mean, are we? Is that a big leap?
It's interesting for the Falcons because I will say there are definitely people in the league who think that Raheem Morris is their top candidate right now. And I also believe that Bill Belichick would already be their coach if they were sold on him. I don't know what you wait for. Arthur Blank might be taking note of, like, why is no one else interviewing him? And why is there so much interest in some of these other guys that we're talking to, including Raheem Morris? Here's what I think. I just want to know. I understand that it's pretty valuable for teams to be able to interview coaching candidates en masse, because then they can just steal everybody's ideas in theory, as long as they can execute them. But, like, how many people can you interview 7 billion times?
Yeah, I think the second interview portion of this is a confusing one for sure. I'm with you. I think it slows down the whole process and then you start paralysis by analysis. I'll add one thing to the Atlanta coaching search. I talked to a friend, a longtime friend that knows that city incredibly well and has worked around him with several of the sports teams in Atlanta. And he made a point to me. I asked him, I said, you know what? He's a lifelong diehard Falcons fan, yes, but he's also worked around several of these teams. And I said, look, let me ask you, you want Belichick? And his answer in all caps was hell no. And I said, why? And it was interesting. He said, first of all, there is still a level of love it or hate it. There's a level of culture, like fan hurt that comes from the concept of the Patriots. So I do think that to a fan base, you have to sell a Patriot coming in knowing the history they have 28-3, the jokes that will come around that. But number two, he made the point. He said, Atlanta is an interesting place culturally, and you really have to get what Atlanta is, who Atlanta is. You have to get the people of Atlanta. There's an element of Atlanta that is very unique to itself, and they love that. They have pride in that. Will Belichick want to or be willing to come in and assimilate him into himself in the culture of Atlanta? I think we all know the answer to that seems to be no. Now, winning forgives everything. I get that. But when you are selling to a fan base, hey, we're about to take this leap, and you're selling somebody that has, right or wrong, a contentious memory with the fan base and also may not culturally fit in with what the city represents, becomes a really tough sell. And I found it interesting that somebody that knows that city far better than I do would come back as their immediate response to that. I think the Falcons do, even though Atlanta may not be the best sports city when it comes to passionate fandom, I do think that owners more than ever listen to their fans now and the concept of their fans when they're trying to figure out who they can sell the press conference to. And I'm not sure, as controversial as it sounds when I say it, that Belichick would actually win the press conference in that city.
Okay, first of all, we have Dan Campbell in the Final Four after very much not winning the press conference several years ago. So I think you need to keep that in mind.
Well, Campbell won the press conference. He won the press conference in Detroit. Lions fans loved him.
You think he did?
I think Lions fans loved him. We just made fun of him in the national media. But yeah.
Okay, that's fair. And I think Nick Sirianni, similarly, with all his blossoming flower, had questions and then took him to a Super Bowl. So on one hand, I think that winning the press conference is overrated, whereas I don't know which way this goes. Mike McCarthy, when he said, told Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones that he watched every play from the previous season and then said in his introductory press conference that he lied about that. I definitely had thoughts about that. But I think with Bill Belichick, like, you're not hiring Bill Belichick to integrate in the community and to kiss babies and to go out and talk. I mean, maybe he will talk on the radio. He actually did a fair amount of radio and TV in Boston. So I think he talked a little more than people think he did and will like do film breakdowns with the team. But I think that fans are not going to come to the game because they're integrating themselves culturally with Bill Belichick. They're going to come to the game because a six-time Super Bowl champion coach is now coaching their super talented roster. So I think that you do not need any more buzz beyond that. And I think that I don't think Belichick can lose the introductory press conference. He might not say what they want to hear, but it doesn't matter because it won't be about what he's saying. It's going to be about who's saying it.
But all fair points. My only pushback would be, you're right to all of that. My only pushback would be short-term, long-term, you don't get any grace when the fan base hates you from the day you were hired. You better win. Like, you better win.
I don't think they'll hate him. He'll be theirs at that point.
You think Belichick is Atlanta? I don't know. I don't know.
I think if you can't beat him, join him.
That's fair. We'll see. To your point, they've done so many second interviews. I'm not sure what will eventually make it all make sense. One thing I do know is that there have been a couple of hires that were made. They're substantial. And when we come back, we'll tell you why all of those hires speak to what organizations are doing and how they're structuring things, which may or may not lead to the future of the NFL and success. We'll tell you about that when we come back. All right, Jory, a couple of hires did happen, and I want to give them some love here, starting with the Titans hiring Bengals offensive coordinator Brian Callahan as their head coach, and in the process also restructuring their organization. Rand Carthon gets a promotion. He's now not only the GM, but an executive vice president. They have made it clear. Amy Adams Strunk, the owner of the Titans, made it clear from the outset that she wanted better communication and structure in her organization. What we now know from this hire and the reorg is that she just made it clear that she didn't want Vrabel's opinion anymore. So they bring in Brian Callahan. What were your thoughts on this one?
I think it's interesting because Lou Anarumo has been more in the names of like who from the Bengals would get a head coaching job than Callahan in terms of what I've been hearing. But I do think that you got to give him credit, not only for what he did with Joe Burrow, but also for the way that with Jake Browning and that whole team this year, like he really did keep the offense afloat. So it's not a name that I was expecting to be top of the list in this cycle, but I also don't think again that the Titans were going to be at the top of the list. And everyone who knows him, and I do not know him, speaks very highly of him. He definitely seems to be well-respected around the league. His dad is a well-respected offensive line coach in the league. And I think what's interesting is not only was Rand Carthon promoted to executive vice president and GM, but Chad Brinker, who had been the assistant GM, is now the president of football operations. And so Amy Adams Strunk kind of came out with this statement about how Rand will have not roster control, but full roster control, according to this release from the Titans. Oversight of the coaching staff, again, oversight of the coaching staff, that includes the head coach and just sort of his ability. And then Chad Brinker, who really I think we should all keep our eye on, now will be over the salary cap management, over analytics and strategy. And he actually worked in analytics, not only with the Packers while he was there a little bit, but he actually did this sort of like executive MBA program at Northwestern, exploring some of the potentials for salary cap and analytics while he was doing that MBA at the same time as working for the Packers. So I think it will be very interesting to see sort of what he can offer in that regard. And then he'll also see some of the football ops, et cetera. And so I think what they're saying is we want this to be a GM first team. We want this to be a team that the vision is coming from the front office, which Callahan apparently is okay with, or else I don't think he would have taken this job. And because they're putting so much more responsibility on the front office, Rand Carthon will still be the number one, but he and Chad Brinker are going to kind of allocate these things differently. And so they definitely have a vision. I'll give them credit for that. Whether it will work, I don't know. There's also, I was a little bit amused because there's this picture from the draft room at the top of the story, and it's Amy Adams Strunk, Rand Carthon, and Chad Brinker all like smiling at each other. And like Vrabel is not in the picture. And I just feel like, this is a little bit prescient.
It speaks to something Dominique Foxworth said to me a couple of days ago when we were talking about, like, we have to remember that while a coach is on the sidelines, the GM is sitting in the owner's suite right next to the GM, just whispering in their ear about everything that's going right and going wrong, and able in some instances to influence opinion. And, you know, I don't know if that's what happened here, certainly, but it does speak to the fact that Rand has definitely had the ear of Amy Adams Strunk. Like, he gets more power, and I'm not sure what we've seen that shows that ability. I mean, if you look this year at free agency, did they hit massive home runs that I missed? If you look at the draft, Skoronski picked in the first round is still a question mark. Will Levis, they traded up for in the second round, still a question mark. So I think it's a little surprising that Rand Carthon has gotten so much benefit of the doubt so quickly. And as much as I want the Brian Callahan hire to work, because I love anybody having success, I do think it's pretty fair. You mentioned earlier when we talk about front office success, we don't know who's pulling the trigger on what. I will say this, Brian Callahan comes from a head coach that obviously had a ton of say in the offense, and now he goes to a team that does not have Joe Burrow, does not have Ja'Marr Chase, and does not have T. Higgins. Like, so you're about to find out just exactly how good Callahan is, because he's now going to be, if you know, I love my Chopped TV show analogies. Like, he's opening the basket of ingredients in Chopped, and he did have like all the really expensive ingredients he can make a great dinner with. Now he opens it and he's got like, I don't know, Spam and peanut butter. Go make me a sandwich. Like, I just, he's dealing with a lot less when it comes to the ingredient basket and the Titans. And there's going to be some expectation that he's able to do something with that. I think that's asking a lot. I hope it works, but I don't walk away from this with some level of like, oh yeah, this is exactly why we can bank on it.
Well, and I think let's take that a step further, because as we mentioned, Brian Callahan is the son of Bill Callahan, this very well-respected offensive line coach who's been around for a while. And he's going to a Titans organization where the offensive line is one of the biggest questions and something that he's not going to be able to fix overnight. So I think he will be acutely aware of this asset that not only is important to win, but also is important to support your quarterback's development. And I think he's being brought in large part to see if like he can make Will Levis a consistent starter in the league. But does that give you 2 years? Does that give you 3 years? Does that give you 5 years? Because I don't know if the offensive line is going to be fixed by 2024 in order to give Will Levis a realistic chance of developing and seeing the field in a way that can then support the arm talent that we all know he has.
I wonder if there's an element of him hiring his dad. I mean, you just got to wonder, like, his dad's been head coach. his dad could come in and maybe help him. I don't know that I'd want to work with my dad. Like, personally, I would not want to. Let me be very clear in case my dad's watching this. I would not hire my dad. But maybe Brian looks at it and says, hey, I can get some insight on head coaching. I can get some insight on offensive line. Also, are we, and look, I know they traded up for Will Levis, but new regime, who cares? At this point, new regime's got to come in and answer very quickly because the Titans have the 7th pick in the draft. So depending on how the draft plays out, they could be in a situation where they get the 4th best quarterback, the 3rd best quarterback, if somehow there's a miraculous fall I don't think happens. Like, they could be in a situation where they're having to make a tough decision at quarterback, even though they just drafted one. But you got an obligation. You if you're not certain that Will Levis is the guy, you got to move on. So I'm not sure what they should do there.
Yeah, I think it's hard because they just have drafted, I mean, Malik Willis and Will Levis, and they've had Marcus Mariota. Wasn't that long ago, maybe in the terms of NFL standards it was, but they've spent a pretty good amount of draft capital at quarterback. And you also have to remember that, I know Charles Robinson reported it, you might have been reporting it as well, but there was definitely conversation coming out of there last year that Mike Vrabel was not very happy when they drafted Will Levis. And this was like a front office ownership decision. And so if they go and draft another quarterback after giving Will Levis not even a season to try out and also seeing like some promise from him, like he wasn't terrible. He had some good games. Then I think that you really have to question the way that the front office and the ownership is making decisions here.
Well, the thing that I don't question is they're aligned. And I feel like we've talked about this with C-Rob. We've talked about this with each other. The best organizations have a very aligned plan that's communicated, that's easily seen on who controls what. The Titans are that right now. They are aligned. So no matter how it works, I respect that. I'm not sure I can feel the same level of joy down in my heart for the alignment of my beloved Raiders, who only days removed from a hire I loved in Antonio Pierce, have now hired Tom Telesco as their GM. And Mark Davis made it clear in some interviews a few weeks ago with The Athletic that he looks back at one of his hiring mistakes as hiring at one point a first-time coach with a first-time GM. He made it clear in that that's something he's not comfortable with. And Jory, I saw this news of Telesco being hired, who's just recently fired from the Chargers, and that was my first thought. But the problem is, it's not always about experience. Sometimes you just got to look at it and say, okay, was it because I hired an inexperienced coach and an inexperienced GM, or was it because I hired the wrong two guys? Champ Kelly is somebody wildly respected that was there, that had gone through several interviews, that according to multiple reports, sat in head coaching interviews with the organization. He's still on the payroll of the organization as the assistant GM. And he gets passed over for Telesco. And now I feel like I, as a fan, am in this situation where Telesco didn't hire Antonio Pierce. So now what do we have? Do we have this weird world where it doesn't work out for a year or two and the GM's like, see, I told you it wasn't. And then all of a sudden, like, I need clear power to feel comfortable in what's happening. And Telesco puts a wrench in that in my mindset, because how can you have clear power if the person coming in didn't even know Antonio Pierce at that level before he got that job?
Yeah, I understand that there's this case for an experienced GM, and there are some people around the league, because I did not feel this way, and then when I told them, they were telling me this, there are some coaches around the league who are like, look, he put together a talented roster in the Chargers. Like, there were a lot of coaching management, like game management decisions that really kind of derailed those seasons. There were a lot of questions about Staley and his fitness to be in the job that he was in. There are definitely the injuries, which I don't know how much you can factor that into a general manager. I think you can if they were injury prone before, which I would say probably some of those players are. Not that that's their fault that they got injured, but that they took a risk and that was something that was part of the analysis. I just thought it was a lazy hire. And again, I don't know Tom Telesco well. I'm sure he's a great guy, but he had 11 years with the Chargers to figure it out. They made the playoffs 3 times in that stretch. They never made it past the divisional round, which I know being from Dallas, a lot of people don't know how to make it past the divisional round. But I think that, are you hiring him because he found Justin Herbert? And did he find Justin Herbert? For sure, the building deserves credit for that. And I know that people are like, well, he found Eckler. He got Derwin James. And that was it. Let me pull up what this coach was telling me yesterday. They're like, Bosa, Herbert, Williams, Slater, Derwin, Keenan Allen was his first draft, Eckler. There were definitely some picks that he hit on, but I still feel like if you want experience, you should have experience of someone who took a team far, not just found the talent and then didn't know how to work with them. And I think kind of what you're saying, like Champ Kelly has been in a lot of places. He's seen what worked and hasn't. He spent a lot of time in Chicago. Now he's been with the Raiders and understands that organization. You have Ed Dodds, who would have come from the Colts, working under Chris Ballard for a while, seeing all these different ways you could go with quarterback, what didn't work. And then this year, a little more what did work. I just think that this was not the most creative hire. And like you said, it was not one where, I mean, are you bringing him to talk over Antonio Pierce? I don't know. I guess there are some people on the league who are less hesitant about this hire than I am, but I just didn't think it was like guaranteed to find them success and find them the quarterback.
I really thought, because one thing Mark Davis said a few weeks ago is that you need to have somebody maybe in a president type role that knows a lot of football, right? And because he admits what he doesn't know as an owner. When I heard Telesco was interviewing, I thought maybe he was interviewing for that type of a role, like a, you know, an overseer of everything. Yeah, Champ Kelly still gets the GM. And then you've got this little bit of experience in the room and somebody, if I'm making a case for Telesco, somebody that knows the division well. Right. I looked at that and thought, OK, that makes sense. I don't know how we went from that to this, though, because to your point, the biggest reason Antonio Pierce is where he is, I believe, is not just because he's a good coach. He's fine. He proved that. But he also proved that the locker room loves him. Right. Like, and so you've won the locker room. So the first time there's a disagreement between Antonio Pierce and Tom Telesco, what side's the locker room going to take? Right. Like, and that's a dynamic that I think has to be considered. And again, it comes down to everybody being on the same page. And that's something that is just hard for me to see here. I want to remember that when Justin Herbert was drafted, it wasn't a home run. There were plenty of people covering the draft that said, I don't know, he's got some questions. Many of the people you just mentioned were not considered home run. This is a can't miss draft prospect, right? And many of these picks were not made in the top 10. They were made in the middle of the first round. They have built a talented roster. Yes, but my God, I'm glad he's not hiring the head coach because he never got that right. Like, so
I was going to say, you know, have to give him some responsibility for what happened with the coaches there.
Yeah. If Antonio Pierce doesn't work out, you letting Telesco hire your next coach? There's no proof of concept on that. So it just speaks to why I think, Jory, that the best organizations have an understanding of the way you have to build your power structure. You have to build it in the right way where it's so clear who is empowered. And right now, until we hear from Mark Davis, until we hear from Antonio Pierce, Tom Telesco, like, we're going to have to hear from all of them, because right now it's hard to see a path that leads to empowerment of certain people in this situation. And then you're just in a vicious cycle that's going to lead to people getting fired every couple of years, nobody having any accountability, and a constant rebuild. So as much as I loved AP, I don't like Telesco.
Yeah, I think it's fair. And I think I'm also amused because, again, going back to the conversation we were having with Belichick, you're like, is Atlanta going to accept him after they broke their hearts? And to me, it's like, oh, if you can't beat him, join him. Well, this is the opposite. The Raiders went and beat the Chargers 63-21, ran their head coach and GM out of town. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, you know, that team that we crushed by 41 points and just embarrassed. I think that there's a benefit to hiring that GM.
That's maybe the most stunning part of it. I will continue to die on the hill of no team that I can ever remember has played so poorly that they got their own coach fired and so well that they got another coach fired in the same season. That is the landmark moment of my beloved Raiders. They got Josh McDaniels fired and they got the entire Chargers organization in rehab, basically all in a matter of weeks. And now one of those guys is in the building. It's just, Jory, I find it stunning, and it's a reminder that most team owners are owners because they've been very successful at something. Not all of them, but most have been very successful at something. It doesn't mean most team owners are great at running a football team. And to me, you see it constantly. Like, what do you do? This is something I've said about Jerry Jones over the years too. What do you do when the person ultimately in charge, the final yes or no in charge of all of the checks you're going to write, is bad at hiring? Because that's the one person you can't replace. And if that one person happens to be bad at hiring, you are screwed year in and year out.
Right. I do think that's actually a really good point. I think that a general manager, if they have the power, is responsible for both hiring the coaches and hiring the and finding the talent. And Tom Telesco with the Chargers was much better at finding the roster than the coaches. And the same way that he hit on Justin Herbert when there was a sense, he also did not hit on the coaches. And that's something that Las Vegas has to keep in mind.
Yeah, that's going to be the reason I drink. A couple other big at least notes from all of this. The Packers have fired defensive coordinator Joe Barry. Any surprise there for you?
I mean, all these insiders were like, finally, like the long-awaited move was expected. And I'm like, I think his defense did well in the playoffs. I'm not surprised that it happened because I know people were calling for it for a while. But I do think that you have to consider what he did in the playoffs and be like, maybe he doesn't suck.
It's interesting to me because this was supposed to be a year of growth for the Packers without a ton of expectations from most people. And instead, they found themselves not just in the playoffs, but knocking out Dallas in Dallas and then going to San Francisco. And really, like they were one drive away from being in the NFC Championship game, for the love of God. And then they fired the defensive coordinator right away. Now, Brock Purdy had a regrettable game until that last drive. But man, it's hard for me with the Joe Barry thing to look at this and be like, oh yeah, I see that he has been the problem. I'm whenever a coordinator.
Look at what they did to the Cowboys offense too. Maybe the Cowboys just self-imploded, but like, I don't know. It seems like the Packers did something right.
Yeah, I'm with you on that 100%. Another one that I thought was interesting is the Bears have hired Shane Waldron, who was the offensive coordinator of the Seahawks, to be their offensive coordinator. When I don't think, and you tell me, you're reporting. I'm just an idiot in front of a microphone looking at all of this. We are overanalyzing everything the Bears do and what it has to do with Justin Fields. And I don't think any of it has anything to do with Justin Fields. I don't believe that there is any amount of trade equity that could be given up that the Bears will consider to get out of the first pick, that Washington will consider to get out of the second pick, and frankly, that the Patriots will consider to get out of the third. All three franchises need this opportunity that comes with these three quarterbacks that are at the top of the draft. Right or wrong, I think quarterbacks are going 1, 2, 3, and every fan base that's sitting there saying, we got to trade up. No, it's not going to happen. So Justin Fields, I don't know what his future looks like, but I cannot see any path that leads to Chicago not picking a quarterback with the first overall pick. So Shane Waldron, congratulations. You may or may not have Justin Fields, but you are going to have your pick of the litter when it comes to whichever quarterback you want.
Yeah, I agree with you that they're going to go quarterback at all three. And I agree with you, particularly two of those teams, new coaches, new regime, started out with a new quarterback. And the league is set up such that the rookie contracts are so much cheaper that if you can get similar talent, even close, it's a better market deal because then you can bring in the guys around him to support. What I think is humorous when you think about this is think about a team that didn't have that top three pick and traded up for the top three pick, that being the San Francisco 49ers. And while I do think that hitting on Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant, was some degree of luck and some degree of great scouting and understanding what he could do within the confines of your offense, you also still have to remember, like, they traded up for Trey Lance at number three and look how well that worked. And so it is no guarantee. Like, I do think that Justin Fields, Trey Lance, like, there is a chance that Justin Fields is going to have a better career than whoever you pick in the top three. But given the level of talent in this draft class at quarterback, and given the way the league structure is set up from a salary cap standpoint, you can't pass this opportunity up.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I can remember. I mean, I've covered the draft for several years. It's been a long time since I can remember this much hype over multiple guys at the quarterback position, right? Like, it's that's just part of this, is that it's not just Caleb Williams or Drake May or Jaden Daniels. It's all three of them. And each one of them seems to have their own comp. People want Caleb Williams to be Mahomes. People want Drake May to be Andrew Luck. People want Jaden Daniels to turn out and be Lamar Jackson. Now, will all three of them turn out to be that? History says no, right? But the one thing that you have as an organization when you take that pick is you have hope. And right now, to your point, Washington has no hope, in my mind, at the quarterback position. They need a complete overhaul, and they're going to get that in this process. The Patriots just say there's no way Gerard Mayo wants to come into this this process as a first-time head coach with Mac Jones battling it out to be his starting quarterback. So, you know, it's the same at some level with the Bears. Like, you've seen Justin Fields, but also you look at some of the highlight tape that we have on these quarterbacks, including Caleb Williams. It's almost impossible to look at your fan base and be like, nope. Like, you can look at your fan base years from now and say, hey, we made the best decision we could. We took a chance. And if Justin Fields turns out to be pretty good, that's one thing. But are you willing to take the chance that Justin Fields turns out not to be good and all of a sudden you passed on Mahomes again? I just think that there's an element of all of this for the Bears. When you're picking first overall for a franchise that's never had a quarterback, you go get a quarterback. You go get your first quarterback in generations for most of these fans, and you give people the one thing that you can't put a price tag on, which is hope.
Yeah, and I think, again, the reason that Tom Telesco is getting his next job immediately, even when his Chargers weren't that good, and even when general managers get second opportunities less frequently than head coaches, and certainly not right away, is because he found Justin Herbert. I'm not saying that's the only good thing he did, but I do think that that is what's getting him this next opportunity. So if you as a general manager can find that quarterback, there's a lot of good things that can happen for you.
And that's part of why, to go back to your article, which was great, about which, you know, how the league views different coaching openings. And again, I will stress for everyone in your mentions, it's how the league views it, not how you specifically viewed it, but how the league views the openings. If you're the Commanders, you got money to spend. You got big weapons on offense. You got a new ownership group that's going to go out and do whatever it needs to. And you've got the second overall pick in the draft. Like, you are guaranteed to get a quarterback. And that's such a powerful moment here for the franchise, for the coach. Like, you know, there's a part of me that just desperately wants Harbaugh to take the Washington gig, not just because it puts him right down the road from his brother, not just because then we'd have two Harbaughs in the Beltway, which I think is awesome, but also mostly, Jory, because as much as he spent the last year telling us how great JJ McCarthy is, I want to find out if he actually drafts him with the second overall pick. Like, nobody believes he would do it, but come on. Like, I just want to see a world where Harbaugh's like, he's the best quarterback since Brady. And then he's like, nah, but we're taking Drake May. But like, no, JJ's still great.
I know that Cliff Kingsbury didn't have Kyler in college, but it was not that different in the sense of like, he really liked him in college and then he took him in the NFL.
I mean, if somehow Harbaugh takes JJ, like, I need Harbaugh to take the Washington gig. A lot of bricks here, people. I need Harbaugh to take the Washington gig, right? Then I need Harbaugh to shock the world and draft JJ with the second overall pick. You know how much return at that point that they would be able to get, and they being Arizona, who you just mentioned with Kingsbury, you know how much return they'd be able to get for the fourth overall pick? I mean, you start thinking about now, things are going to get really weird, because all of a sudden, one quarterback dropping a four, Arizona's just going to be sitting around saying, we just hit the lottery, y'all. Like, we hit the scratch off lot. Like, you should never pay, like, rely on hitting the lottery to pay your mortgage. But if you are Arizona, you're like, you know what? We're good. But we will take all of your
draft picks. You can use it to pay your mortgage.
At that point, Arizona just turns around and says, we will take all of your draft picks and somebody will move up to get that third quarterback. Whichever that third quarterback is. I saw a mock today that had Drake May going third, and I had another saw another mock that saw Drake May going first. So all that to say, nobody knows which one will be sitting there. But my God, like, if one quarter, I just need J.J. McCarthy to go second. And then all of a sudden, we have absolute chaos at the fourth overall pick. Jory, all I need. This is what I want. This is what you got to scout this out for me while you're in Indy. Is there a chance that JJ goes second so that somebody else goes fourth?
Again, I mean, I'll be in Mobile for the Senior Bowl next week, and I know he won't be there, but a lot of people with these decision making opportunities will.
You're a big fan of Mobile out there, like, you know, the Senior Bowl. It's a fun experience, the Senior Bowl.
I think it's going to be my fifth one. It's an experience for sure. I find it valuable. And I find it entertaining. I have no desire to go to Mobile outside the Senior Bowl ever.
I went to the Senior Bowl once years ago before I was doing this for a living. I was just a podcast trying to make it. And I went to the Senior Bowl, and at the time the Band Perry was doing pretty well. And I'll never forget, I was in a bar right down from all of it, and a now former NFL head coach was very drunk. I mean, he was D-runk, which is my way of saying, like you go from drunk to D-runk. Like, it takes multiple syllables to say how drunk you are. He was D-runk, and he walks up.
A lot of people like that.
Oh, my God, yeah. Somebody told him that I was in the band, and he walks up, and, like, I'm having a conversation with somebody else, and all of a sudden, I've got a phone just shoved in my face. And he's like, look, you're on my playlist. He didn't have a country accent like that, but that's how I'm saying it. And he was so drunk, it just started talking to me. And I was like, I can't believe I'm sitting here talking to you. And then all of a sudden, he's like, you want to see a cool trick? And he just turns around, and he yelled, pizza, at the top of his lungs. Some guy came out of the kitchen and brought a pizza out to him. Just telling you, that's
that
Mobile.
Actually is a pretty cool trick.
I mean, that's, so, you know, little life advice. If you're in a random bar in Mobile, just try screaming.
Pizza!
Scream pizza.
Should I try it?
Yeah.
You know, it's actually funny. I can't remember if I've said this on the pod before, but So the dive bar that everyone at ends their night at the Senior Bowl is called Veats. Veats in Mobile, Alabama, on the main street, very close to the hotel where all the coaches and execs stay. And there's a few years ago when some of my friends were like, should we get Veats shirts? Like, they have all the swag in the back. And it's like, I don't even, you know this, like, I'm not even a big drinker. Like, I don't even know what I'm doing there. I'm like the one who's talking to people about like Shakespeare and the Bible at Veats while there. And and so one of my friends was like, oh, we should do it, we should do it. And then they found, I think it was like an $100 bill on the floor of Veats, and they're like, it's a sign. The shirts were $20. They're like, who wants a shirt? They bought five shirts. So I have this Veats tank top that literally just says Veats, like Mobile's dive bar since whatever year. Black tank top, so comfortable, fits me so well that I wear it all the time. I have voted in my Veats shirt. I have like gone for long runs in it. I've gone on vacation in it, like all of these things. And it is very funny that this place that is like so different than who I am, I rep unbelievably. And Luke Getsy, who was the Bears offensive coordinator until a few days ago and was last year, I believe, the head coach of one of the Senior Bowl teams, who's either head coach or OC, got a Veats shirt and wore it to practice. So keep an eye out for that next week. I know you needed all of that information.
If there's a Veats hoodie, I'll Venmo you. I'm just letting you know right now, I will Venmo you for a Veats hoodie. I've had a couple of drunken nights. Very, very drunken.
It's a great conversation starter.
Yeah. I'm all in on like, and I just remember at the time, again, like as somebody trying to make it in this business, trying to transition from music, looking around, I was like, I cannot believe all of the incredible, we've now given this secret out. Cause like, if you're near Mobile, you can just go over there at after any day of the Senior Bowl and you'll find GMs, you'll find coaches.
Yeah,
everybody's out there hanging out. Speaking of places you can find everybody, you can find me Thursday, Zero Blitz, previewing the conference championship games with the great Frank Schwab. We've now made it, you know, Frank's now a permanent fixture on it, even if he doesn't want to be. So every Thursday, Frank gets to hang out with me in addition to Sunday. That's the way it goes. You can follow us on social media, of course, at Jory Epstein, at SJ Rochelle. Stone is our producer behind the glass doing God's work. You can also find me at Jason Fitz. And don't forget, of course, on this show always, you can continue to support the legacy of Therese Paylor. All you got to do is go to BreakingT.com/Therese for the all juice tea or hoodie. And you can support the scholarships at Howard and at Mizzou directly, of course. But if you just go to Breaking Tea, that's just the letter T, BreakingT.com/Therese. That's a great way to get you the hoodie. Speaking of hoodies, it is wildly comfortable. It is wildly fluffy. It is amazing. I just realized my friend has a dog named Juice, so I'm sending him an all Juice hoodie for Juice. That's what we're doing. You can also find the description in the podcast description, and be sure to leave us that 5-star review. Let us know what you think of the show, as long as you love it. If you don't love it, screw off. No, if you don't love it, just, you know, don't leave a reason for you. That's all we ask. In the meantime, rate, subscribe, tell your friends, your family and enemies. Tell everybody to hang out with us. We will be back next week with more inside coverage and more really behind the story Veats stories. That's all we can offer you.